A few brief snow showers, a top temperature of 5 centigrade 41 Fahrenheit in central London, just 3 centigrade 37 Fahrenheit in the suburbs. Tonight will be dry, fine and very frosty, the temperature falling to minus 1 centigrade 30 Fahrenheit in town and as low as minus 6, that's 21 Fahrenheit in the suburbs. There'll be some mist patches as well by the end of the night. LBC.
Everyday living can take it out of your skin. No wonder facial skin can be sensitive skin. And sensitive skin needs more sensitive care in your beauty routine. Cuticura soap is especially formulated for facial cleansing, and it won't leave your skin feeling tight. Cuticura mildly medicated soap takes extra care of sensitive skin. From chemists everywhere.
Special edition! Read all about it!
Best special edition around must be the Fiesta Festival.
Bet your paper here!
All that equipment makes it great value.
Read all about it!
Adjustable head restraints, remote-controlled door mirrors.
Good news for drivers!
Sunroof and radio.
Sunroof and radio!
White wheel covers.
White wheel covers!
The Special Edition Fiesta Festival, available from your local newsagent. Ford dealer, sorry.
Hello, this is William Davis, editor of High Life and former editor of Punch. Bob Holness usually sits here, putting all sorts of intimate questions to his guests and asking them to pick some music which has a special meaning for them. You may just recall that he did it to me not too long ago. Well, it seems only fair that someone one day should do the same to him. And when I suggested the idea to the LBC brass, they readily agreed. So, Mr. Holness, it's your turn to face the Inquisitor. Are you apprehensive?
Filled with trepidation, Bill. Absolutely filled. I have no idea what you're going to ask me. And I just sit here and suffer.
Well, you know, being a broadcaster for more than 30 years, do you remember your first broadcast? Because my first one, about the same time, absolutely terrified me.
Yes, I do. I was an actor. It was overseas. I was a stage actor. Hadn't been an actor for that long, but I left the theatre to get married, and the theatre producer, or rather the producer at the radio station there, who was a theatre-goer, first night theatre-goer, rang us both up and said, do you want to do radio? We'd never done radio before, neither Mary or myself. And we said yes, and we went into... I've got an idea. It was a Bulldog Drummond soap opera. I think it was. I know it was one of those short plays, you know, one of those things like, in fact, Blockbusters is now, stripped across the week. It was one of those things. But it was acting.
Well, we'll get back to your acting role in a moment. No. But let's go back a bit further, before that time.
Before
at 16 and a half, you were an apprentice printer. Whatever happened to that noble career?
You have been looking me up, haven't you?
Indeed.
Oh, dear me. Well, I left school at 16 and a half, and my father reckoned I should do something worthwhile. I liked print art design. It was one of my things at school. I was quite good at painting and drawing. I almost decided to become a cartoonist. Now, there's a thing I've never told anybody. And we used to do strip cartoons at school. We used to spend our time doing strip cartoons, which is probably why I didn't pass any examinations. And when I came out, I had to do something. So there was a local printing firm which had an art and design section. And I trotted along, I remember it now, with my father. I wanted to become a machine minder. I wanted to operate one of those big machines. But somehow I said the wrong thing and found myself a compositor.
Another lost opportunity, and you ended up in broadcasting.
My life's full of them.
Well, then you did your national service in the Royal Air Force as a radar operator. Did you enjoy that?
2.5 years. Yes, it was quite fun. A lot of people say it's a lot of old codswallop. But no, I think what it did to me, it actually made me do things like make my bed and keep the floor clean and that sort of thing, and brings a sense of discipline into your mind. I sat for a long, long time on Romney Marsh in RAF Rye. I was there in the RAF for 2.5 years, and they were short of radar operators, so I had to stay in longer than I wanted to. But it was quite a... Looking back, it didn't seem that awful, really.
Some people think it would be a very good thing if national service were brought back.
Yes, I know they do.
Do you share that view?
Not national service as such. I think that's going a bit strong. I think some sort of service that gets people together and gives them a sense of discipline and sense of determination, something to aim at, yes, rather than have them wandering around listlessly. I think some sort of youth training, some sort of voluntary service overseas would be ideal, yes, absolutely.
Well, in the early 50s, your parents moved to South Africa.
That's right.
And you went with them, and that's where you became an actor. Now, how did that happen?
Well, I'd done print and art and design at Maidstone College of Art, and I got into this, and I... went up to an apprentice friend of mine and said, look, I've just noticed in Australia they give you assisted passages, 10 quid. Remember that?
Mm, yeah, I do.
Do you?
A lot of people left. Doesn't happen anymore.
Went to my mother, I said, look, I want to see the outside world, I want to go to Australia. And they blanched visibly and said, why Australia? And I said, why not? They said, well, we were thinking of going back, my mother was South African, to South Africa. And so I said, they said, come back with us and my sister. So the four of us went back to South Africa and we arrived in Durban. And the moment I got there, and I got in on the strength of going to a printing job, you had to have a job to go to, which was the really only good use that the printing trade had for me at that time, even though I was a qualified printer. And I went into a print shop for about a month and a half when I got out there while I looked around. And just by chance, a theatre was opening smack in the middle of Durban. I'd always wanted to go professionally because I'd done a lot of amateur work. So I walked in.
Now, did you like acting? I mean, did you have any sort of great dreams of becoming a new Laurence Olivier?
No. It's fun.
But what kind of acting did you do?
Fortnightly rep. There was a certain...
juvenile leads, were you?
Yes, I was in the end, yes. And Mary, my wife, was also sort of juvenile female lead. But, I mean, when you say lead, there weren't any other juveniles in the company. We had to do something. I started off by, you know, the ASMing and everything, but I was in a play almost the moment I joined.
You met Mary there?
Yes.
And you got married there?
She went out under a year's contract. It was a new theatre. It started by a chappie named Michael McNeil, who was a theatre manager, but he was the son of Sapper, the chap who wrote all the Bulldog Drummond books.
Now, then you got into radio, and it was obviously your first love, broadcasting. Is it still?
Oh, yes, I think so.
Why is that?
It's more relaxing than anything else. You don't have to worry what you look like, Bill. I mean, you know that, don't you?
At our age, yeah, you've got to worry.
No, it is totally relaxing, isn't it? And you have to actually transmit what your emotions are, what you hope they're going to be, solely by your voice, you know, and it's an art, and I love it.
Now, you spent quite a bit of time then you came back to Britain in 1961. Why did you come back? I mean, and how do you feel? I mean, a lot of people, I'm sure, want to know the answer to this one. How do you feel about what's been happening in South Africa? Did you come back because you were disturbed by apartheid and all the other things?
There were any number of reasons, really. Apartheid down in Natal, although it existed, I mean, there's no denying that, it didn't have as high a profile as it did in other parts of the Union at that time. And, yes, there, I've let it slip. Union, I said. Of course, it's a republic now. We were out there when the Union of South Africa became a republic and left the Commonwealth. And that was one of the deciding factors in my life. I was there when it happened, and I thought, I don't want to cast off links with Britain. I want to go back. I want to go back home. And I wanted to try television, and I didn't want my two daughters, who were born by that time, to be educated in South Africa. I wanted them to come back home and be educated. So in 1961, we made the big decision and came back on a shoestring. I mean, we literally had the fare and just about nothing else. And arrived with all our possessions on Southampton docks on the old Union Castle line, three crates of which were records. I was in the business, and the guy, I remember the customs officer coming up and saying, what's that then? I said, records. He says, that. I said, records. And that, records. Going to start a shop, are you, sir? I said, no, it's the business I'm in, you know. And that was the most important part of my possession. Still is, really.
Yes. Well, now, one of the records I don't know whether that was in your possession at the time or in that that load is the first one you've chosen. I'm intrigued by this choice of singer as much as anything else. Nat King Cole, one of my favourites too, of course.
Well, this goes back to long before Nat King Cole was the lush ballad singer with masses of strings and Gordon Jenkins and people. This goes back to the King Cole trio days. Now, the first record I ever bought, and records have always loomed large in my life, which is why when I was asked to choose four, it was probably the hardest decision I've made, and probably after this is all over, I'll regret
it. You know
it.
What it's like now, do you?
Yes, I do.
Have more sympathy for your guests in the future.
The first record I ever bought was a British Home Stores in Maidstone, and it was a 78 of Charlie Barnett playing Skyliner. Now, I was tempted to put that in, then I thought, no, I won't, because I've got a long passion about Nat King Cole's singing, and I remember the days when he was every year topping the polls as Jazz Pianist of the Year. Absolutely superb. And there was the King Cole Trio before he became an international ballad singer. The King Cole Trio made some beautiful, beautiful recordings.
Well, you're just an old-fashioned romantic, but
that's right.
Why this particular song?
I think because it was one of the first Nat King Cole records I bought. It's the same reason. Capitol at that time, and I won't go into this in too much detail because it's boring to people who are not interested in this particular topic. Capitol at that time were impossible to get in Britain. You had to go into a Charing Cross bookshop, Charing Cross Road, and buy them from under the counter, American copies of Capitol records, because they hadn't got an outlet in Britain. And this was one that came out at that time, which I bought on an American copy, a big heavy 78 with a silver label. And you play it three times, and of course it had white marks all the way around it. This is a reissue, and it's on LP, and its title is Lilette.
A boy and a girl fell in love long ago, but that love soon lost its way. Though he wooed her and wooed her, in vain he pursued her, and every night the neighbors hear him say, Lilette, Lilette, my little violet, won't you please come back, oh please come back to me. I can't forget that lucky night we met, and the way our lips met oh so tenderly. Your eyes are like the bluest skies in spring to me. Your kiss must be an angel kiss, cause heaven is what it brings to me. Lilette, Lilette, I'm gonna get you yet. Won't you please come back, oh please come back to me. Must be an angel kiss, cause heaven is what it brings to me. Lilette, Lilette, I'm gonna get you yet, and the day I do, I know you'll say I do. Now don't you go stalling when I come a-calling at your front door. Lilette, I'm gonna get you yet.
Now, Bob, while this was going on, you were pounding a non-existent piano, and you were singing. Now, look, you were singing this song. You have everybody knows your broadcasting voice, but singing, maybe they... Can you... Come on, give us
no,
a couple
no,
of...
No,
come
no,
on, come
no,
on, have a try.
Find out.
Have
no,
a try.
No,
give
no,
us a couple
no,
of...
No.
Go on, swing, a little,
no,
little
no,
bit
no,
of
that's
it.
A, that's an embarrassing thing I've ever been asked to do.
Well, of course.
Douglas Cameron once asked me to do that on the AM show. And, I mean, how could I say, Lilette,
how could you sing that, yes?
I couldn't.
Go on, then.
Do I? No, I'm not going to, Bill. No, there's a limit to these interviews.
Well, you've done so many things. Singing is obviously not part of it, which perhaps we should be grateful for that.
Yes, I think perhaps you should. We have a Frank Sinatra coming up later. I might join in at the end of that.
We'll get round to that. Let's get back to when you came back from South Africa to Britain.
Oh, it's a long
poor,
time ago.
Poor, yes, I know. This poor little boy looking for a job. Now, the extraordinary thing is you got a job in broadcasting here, and there you are, wing, into television, hosting a panel game. How did you get that?
Well, it was luck. You know, I mean, you know, you must know, surely, how much of one's business career and life depends on luck. And if anybody says to me these days, did you have one big break, it would be then. Because we landed in Southampton, as I say. We stayed for a week or two with Mary's parents in Cricklewood. And I went round to see the various television companies, which I'd written to from South Africa. And they were very nice. They gave me cups of coffee and introduced me to other people and saw me on my way. And I left Granada till last because they answered on the smallest bit of notepaper of the lot, you see. And I walked into Golden Square just when they were looking for somebody to compare a panel game who'd never been on television before. And it was a matter of being at the right place at the right time. It's one of those incredible things. I walked in and they said, natter, natter, natter. I met the chappie who was the head of Light Entertainment, recognised him because he used to broadcast. That was quite useful. And then they said, take a camera test. And I took a camera test and they rang up rather dazedly and said, we would like to offer you a 3-year contract. I signed the contract, 3 weeks to the day after landing here in Southampton. The biggest break of all, really.
Mm.
Security, is it?
You've done a lot of game shows since then. Do you enjoy them?
I enjoy them very much, particularly with young people. Mm. They're great fun. I did Take a Letter, which was the one you're talking about, for 2.5 years. Do you know, Bill, it's still got Take a Letter. It was a sort of cryptic crossword-type game. It's still got the record for the highest number of competition entries from viewers for any panel game in this country. We used to throw one tiny section of the show. It was on Wednesday night, every Wednesday night at 7 o'clock. One tiny section open to the public. And they wrote in and solved a little mystery. And there were some lovely letters used to come in. 1 week, we couldn't get the office door open. 980,000 entries had come in. 980,000. It got me a picture on the front of the TV Times next week.
Marvellous.
Black and white, of course.
Yeah. Yes, do you believe in luck?
Oh, yes. Mm. Oh, of course. Don't you?
Well, I find that the harder I work, the more I have of it, yes.
Yeah.
But, you know, hand on heart, we know you're good as a host. Would you be any good as a contestant on, say, Blockbusters?
No, I don't think so.
Why not?
I don't know. Now, what an interesting question. I don't think anybody's ever asked me that. I used to do Crisscross Quiz as well, and I used to find the youngsters who did Crisscross Quiz were orientated in that direction. I have always liked games, quiz games, panel games, and that sort of thing. But under stress and under the lights and in front of the camera, it's a very different thing from sitting at home with your feet up. And you have to actually calm your nerves as you go up there. Now, I don't get terribly nervous. I'm not shivering with fear over this, although I should be, heaven knows. It's just that given that the light on you and the 60 seconds to get across a board, I think the mind would start to seize up. I've yet to be tested.
Maybe somebody should have a try.
You're not thinking of doing that.
I'll suggest that to a few
people. No, please don't.
But I think it's very reassuring, I think, to contestants that a host who normally appears to know all the answers, if the tables were turned on him, would have a hard time.
Well, he's got them written down, hasn't he?
Yes, exactly. Oh, well, you have it easy, yes.
Thank you very much.
Now, you've just done about every kind of programme. I mean, documentaries, children's programmes, news and current affairs, radio drama, even a wildlife series. Any particular type you enjoy most?
Interesting. I've enjoyed all of those. The documentary series, a lot of them were the early World in Actions with a chap called Tim Hewitt, an Australian journalist over here who was dynamic. He did the Paris plastic bombings, Cuba C was one of the big ones, got an award for that. And I worked with him on all those. It was a marvellous experience. And then I've almost forgotten this. You said a wildlife series. It was called Breakthrough. And Granada used to have a film unit at London Zoo. And it was one of the nice times because I was down here at home. I didn't have to go out to Manchester for it. I'll get up at the crack of dawn and go into London Zoo before the visitors arrived and go through to the unit where they were doing all this marvellous filming on insects and birds and things. Terrific stuff. And I'd talk to the birds and animals as I went through first thing in the morning. They got to know me, actually.
Oh, yes. Must have had some interesting conversations. Yes, perhaps more interesting than this one. I don't know. I do talk to animals and birds.
Look,
we've both, Bob, worked in news and current affairs, and we know it can be pretty hectic. I mean, I've been, particularly you on AM, which everyone remembers. Are you good at handling a crisis? I mean, do you stay calm, or are there moments of
panic? Yes, I think I
sometimes?
Do, yes. Mm. You either do or you don't. It's in your makeup, isn't it? Either you panic or you don't. I think it's difficult not to panic sometimes. I mean, when Dougie and I knew when we were doing the AM show, we had some fairly hairy editions where something happened smack in the middle of the show. The John Lennon killing was in the middle of the show and everything went out of the window. The Pope, sudden Pope's death, of course, and we got onto the Vatican straight away, the producer, he's on the phone for 20 minutes. And, of course, all the prepared programme goes out and you have to ad-lib and push stuff in. And you don't really, it's funny this, you don't really have time to panic.
No, that's a good thing about radio, too. It can respond and the adrenaline gets
on
going.
On television, I've never had to cope with that sort of panic. I think on television it would be a lot more difficult.
Now, you come across always as Mr. Nice Guy. Justified. tell me honestly, do you ever lose your temper?
Not often. No, I don't. I can't actually remember getting to screaming, shouting pitches. And I can't say I never have. I mean, because when one looks back, I suppose with fear at one or two confrontations, I suppose you could count them in the fingers of my hands, really, when I've really come up against. I suppose I'm basically a bit of a coward, you know. I don't like that sort of confrontation. Yeah. I tell you, it really upsets me. If I have a disagreement with somebody, or if someone does something which I think is a pretty reprehensible thing to do and I'm involved, I worry about it. And that feeling doesn't go away for days. I can keep it for a week and wake up thinking about it. I don't like rows and try and avoid them, you see. You're not going to say anything that'll make
No. News and current affairs people are often, I mean, certainly happened to me, accused of being too gloomy. I mean, that we're all doing news programs obsessed with the word crisis. Oh, very fond of a quote. Chesterton said that journalism largely consists of saying Lord Jones is dead to people who never even knew he was alive. Always seemed to me to sum up journalism pretty well. But yeah, now you're a cheerful sort of chap. Do you think this criticism is justified, that in general news programmes and people working on them are too gloomy?
I think probably there's a great deal in that. I mean, you know, because it's a sort of byword in Fleet Street, isn't it, that the bad news is the good news as far as they're concerned. The bad news makes the stories. When things are going well and the good news, it hardly makes the headlines. It has to be the disasters and the glooms and everything that are bad. We try. I know we used to, Dougie and myself, we used to try and temper it by trying to be cheerful. Different, difficult. You can't be cheerful when there's tragedy looming on the horizon.
Yeah, but you can look for a few bits of cheerfulness.
Yes, which we used to do, and I'm sure they still do.
And all that sort of
I'm not that closely involved now, but I think it's a good thing to do still.
Now, why do you think there's this obsession with gloom? I find it hard to understand that particularly in this country, we seem to be obsessed with failure and disaster and crisis.
It's nothing
and
new,
that
is it?
Sort of thing. No.
I mean, when you come into LBC here on the wall, you've got pictures of newspapers, genuine editions from way, way back. And each and every one is a disaster, you know that? Because headlines have always been disaster headlines. I mean, how often do you have a major headline on the front of a Fleet Street paper saying, Britain's doing well, we're marvellous? Yes, somebody once said you never had it so good. We all know that. That didn't make the headlines. No. That was right down at the bottom of the page.
Well, now you're away from depressing people and you're into the business of cheering them up, I mean, on these game shows. But the other thing that interests me about you is that, like Jimmy Savile, you seem to have a special rapport with children. You look horrified.
It's the first time...
The only thing you have in common is that you get on well with kids, it seems.
Oh, yes, I see.
Me.
Fine, yes, I see.
And why do you think you have this rapport with children?
I don't know. I suppose I have youngsters of my own. I've worked with youngsters in quite a number of programmes. And when you do have three people who are now grown up, but who have gone through that youngster stage, you hope to keep in tune with them. I tell you what, it's also the fact that one's in the business of playing music. I've always done music programmes, and programmes which are related to popular music of the time. And if you want to stay in tune, you have to stay in tune with what the youngsters are buying and liking, and I think that keeps you in tune with their way of thinking.
Well, you're a little kid at heart anyway, aren't you?
Yes, I suppose I am, really, yes.
And I think the good thing is that you don't patronise children as so many adults do.
I suppose if you to say so. I try not to.
Well, I've never heard you do that, and I think children, you know, get very offended if you try to patronise them, if you play the sort of Uncle Bob.
Yes, I think you're
kind
right.
Kind of role.
Do you want to hear another record?
I think it might be a good idea. And, of course, I mean, tell us about the Stan Kenton and why you've chosen this
record. Yeah, anybody who knows me at all will have known that they're all sitting back at home there saying, yeah, well, I told you he would. I just had a thing about Stan Kenton. I was essentially a big band fan from the very beginning. That first record was Charlie Barnett. This is Stan Kenton. And, again, the reason, I'm afraid, is nostalgic, because I'm a bit of a nostalgic fool, too, as well. It goes back to one of the very first Stan Kenton records I bought. June Christie is singing on it, and it was an era where music was very exciting, particularly Stan Kenton's music. They were wild and they were controlled, but they had a wildness and an excitement about them, as indeed did the Ted Heath Band and people over here, but Kenton was something special. And this one is a Duke Ellington number, sung by June Christie, and to me it's the definitive version of Just a Sitting and a Rocking. My baby.
Just a Sitting and a Rocking, sung by June Christie with Stan Kenton and his band. And William Davies is in conversation with Bob Holness on LBC.
The Schreiber sale is now on, and we're open today till 4. Come and see Schreiber's extensive ranges of quality fitted kitchens and bedrooms. There are exciting new designs for 87 and amazing reductions in the Schreiber sale. 33 1/3% off all Schreiber kitchen units when you fit them yourself. 25% off all fitted bedrooms. We're open today from 10 till 4 at 101 Baker Street, Chaseside Southgate, Broad Street Teddington, Belmont Road Uxbridge and High Street Watford.
Exactly 1:30, Therese Birch with LBC News. Police in Belfast have admitted their officers shot two women customers during a shootout at a restaurant. They'd opened fire on armed robbers who were later found to be carrying toy guns. Hungry Palestinians in two camps in Lebanon have had some relief today. The Shiite Amal militia, which controls the area, allowed thousands of people out of Rashidiye in southern Lebanon, but only a few small groups of women and children have been allowed to leave Burj al Barajna in Beirut, where children are dying of malnutrition. Mark and Diane Thatcher have flown out of Heathrow Airport on a plane bound for Australia. The solemn-looking couple are believed to be heading even further east to enjoy the sun and surf of Fiji. Slimmers who eat special diet foods may find that the cure is worse than the original condition. American researchers have found that women using artificial sweeteners put on more weight than those who stick to sugar. One football result to give you, it's in Division 1, Wimbledon 2, Charlton 0. And the weather this afternoon in London, cold and sunny. On the east side of London, especially in Essex or Kent, there could be some brief snow showers. A top temperature of 5 centigrade 41 Fahrenheit in central London, 3 centigrade 37 Fahrenheit in the suburbs. Tonight will be dry, fine and very frosty, the temperature falling to minus 1 centigrade 30 Fahrenheit in town, as low as minus 6 centigrade 21 Fahrenheit outside the capital, with some mist patches too by the end of the night. LBC.
Beware the plaque traps around the gums and gaps between your teeth. And because plaque absorbs tar and nicotine stains, it's even worse for smokers. However, help is at hand. As clinical studies have shown, regular brushing with Topal Smoker's tooth polish helps clear that plaque, as well as tackling tar and nicotine stains. Beware the plaque traps. Twice a day, every day, use Topal Smoker's tooth polish. It fights plaque and smoking stains. At chemists now.
Welcome back. I'm in conversation with Bob Holness, who is more used to asking questions than answering them.
True.
But today he's in the hot seat. Let's talk about your taste in music for a moment, Bob. You've been a disc jockey and you've presented jazz programmes. And judging by what we've heard, you're rather addicted to this old-fashioned stuff, aren't you? What kind of music do you enjoy at home?
Well, of course, when one sort of has been in the business of playing music for so long, one amasses quite a number of records. And the tragedy is, when you say play at home, I hardly ever play for my own enjoyment now. I do a lot of writing at home, and I do a lot of scripting of various things, and I actually think that one day I should actually get down, put my feet up, and play some records I like for an extended period. The only time I play records, really, is when someone comes round, and you know they like records as well, and you like to say, here, do you want to hear so-and-so? And you put it on. So really and truly, I've got, I suppose, some year's supply of records to sit back and listen to one day. And when I do, they'll range from the record we played earlier on, just before the news, Stan Kenton's Sitting and a Rocking, which is one of the very early ones, right through to so recent stuff as well. I mean, I still buy albums, and it may have seemed that my choice has been old-fashioned. Well, as I said, I'm a bit nostalgic for the old big bands and everything, but I do play modern stuff as well. Not too much. I think modern jazz has lost a lot of the form and excitement it used to have. It's got a bit mechanical and sort of cool. Classics I like, as will be proved towards the end of this programme, but not deep classics. I'm not into Shostakovich and people like that, but I do love classical music, Vivaldi and Telemann and things like that. So really it's a mixture, a total mixture.
You say records, of course, but I mean tapes. You've heard of tapes.
Yes, I have heard of tapes.
You've heard
yes.
cassettes and things like
yes.
that. And when you drive to work or anything like that, do you? I mean, I find myself sort of pushing something light into the car to listen to cheer me up and make it easy to cope with a traffic jam. What sort of thing do you listen? Do you do that?
Yes, I've got cassettes in the car now. I've got two cassettes, long ones. They're a particular series that came out on RCA, which fills with music, you know, they've really packed it on. One is a selection of Mozart favourites, and the other one is Vivaldi. Because Vivaldi's marvellous for driving to. Yeah. Mm. Drive along to Vivaldi. It fills you with good spirits.
Well, you can also, of course, listen to the radio while you're driving along. What do you think of present-day disc jockeys and rock music and all that noise? I mean, that's declaring my attitude to it. But what do you think of it?
Let's put it this way. There was a time when I actually used to watch Top of the Pops. I think that there was a time when it was interesting, and this is not too long ago, when there used to be new artists coming up, when you used to watch the charts and see what was popular, really because I had youngsters who were doing the same thing, I suppose, and I used to find it genuinely interesting. Some of the things you didn't like, some of the things you did, I find now that I really almost can't watch. I think some of the music today has reached such a mishy-mashy, non-stylistic type of output, that really there isn't, this is going to probably alienate any number of people, I don't think the pop music scene today is producing any lasting music. I think it's very sad. You have people, I mean, yes, indeed, you have people like Paul Simon who are doing superbly. I mean, that sort of thing I don't count as pop. I count that as sort of class pop, almost middle of the road, but it's bearable and listenable to. But most of the groups around today, I don't think have an identification that they did just a few years ago.
Well, and often Here Today and Gone Tomorrow.
Oh, very much so. Here Today and Gone Tonight,
The turnover rate is extraordinary. Would you like to be a disc jockey again? Would that appeal to you? Or do you feel this belongs to your younger days and you may be possibly out of touch with the audience?
Yes, I think so. No, I think I prefer to just host middle-of-the-road programmes, which I do on certain other stations. Mm. And I've worked for BBC World Service for 20 years and do request programmes. I adore music programmes, yes. But the DJ days actually went way back in South Africa, when I used to play things like Frankie Avalon and Fats Domino and all that lot, you see. Record presenting and DJ. There was a newspaper item a little while ago, I shan't name the paper, and the chap said, the host of Blockbusters, former Radio 1 DJ Bob Holness. I've never worked for Radio 1, ever, and I've never really thought I was a DJ as such. You know, a music presenter is something a little bit different.
Mm.
Yes, I used to be, a long time ago, but it was a very long time ago.
I watched you early on and say, pounding, you know, kind of when you hear these records, you stand up and you're going, boo, and you're pounding the piano and so on. Would you like to have been a musician yourself?
Oh, yes, of course I would, yes.
I mean, what sort of musician?
Well, I took piano lessons when I was very small. It wasn't terribly easy to take piano lessons because we didn't have a piano, but I used to practice on the lady's piano next door. This was down in Ashford in Kent. And I got through the theory exams, one after another, very well indeed, in the Trinity School of Music. But I never actually progressed much in the practice because I went into the Air Force, gave it up, and never took it up again. That's been one regret. My other regret is that we didn't have some sort of musical influence within our family who would persuade me to take up an instrument early. I would have loved to have played the flute and the trombone.
Mm.
I think the flute and the trombone, particularly in swing and jazz music, and indeed in some of the pops today, create some of the most beautiful sounds.
Did you not love enough, or was it that you're busy with other things, or is it that you really can't, you really haven't got any talent for it, and therefore you want
probably,
to do things well or not at all?
Right, yes. George Chisholm let me blow his trombone once. it was an epic occasion. It went, and I got a out of it, and it did actually go, and so everybody applauded, but that's as far as they got, you see.
Yes.
That plunger beat me, it really did. I think possibly you've hit the nail on the head. Total lack of talent.
Mm. Mm. For this one, is it? For playing
musical
instrument.
Yes.
Well, I mean, it's something I share with you.
Is it?
I'm pretty hopeless at it. And
I can't see you playing a tenor sax or anything like that.
No, I sing in the bath, though.
Do you?
I'm sure you do, too.
Would you like to give us a song?
No. I mean, you're the guest on this programme. Look, don't stop taking over the show again. You can do that next week. Not today, you don't. Today, you're here to answer some questions.
Yes, sir.
All right. What sort of television programmes do you watch, Bob? We know your taste in radio. We know you're on television a lot. What sort of things do you enjoy most?
Well, that's changed over the years. I suppose everybody's taste has changed. Your taste changes according to what you're offered, I suppose, on the box. I have always been interested, because of the acting background, I suppose, in drama. I mean, if there's a play on, whatever channel, we'll home in on that play to see what it's like, because Mary's great on drama as well, and we do enjoy a good play more than anything else. We've had some very good ones lately, you know. Over the last few months, there's been quite a lot of good drama on the box. There's been controversial drama, like The Singing Detective, for instance, but the style of that was marvellous. The She-Devil, too, you see. All incredible style, you know. And whether you agreed with what they did, You had to admire them for doing it.
Well, there's nothing much stylish about some of the cop shows, especially the American imports, and about the soap operas and things like that.
There's too much of that, I think. I really do think there's too much imported American stuff and too much imported violent American stuff.
Well, there's not too much violence on blockbusters and the other shows.
Not a great deal, no.
Unless it gets cut out, of course.
Yeah, sure.
But perhaps it's because contestants are frightening who there. But do you think that this violence on television is having a bad effect on young people in this country? Do you agree with that view?
Yes. Do you want me to go further?
No, of course, happily, yes.
I just feel that however much people will deny that copycat crimes exist, I think they do. Mm. And I think that when you have certain types of violence on the screen, even though they may not have a disastrous effect in the story on the screen, the actual method of violence can be copied. And I think there's too much of that going on. I suppose, really, we should be thankful if we're not in America, where there's a lot more of that particular type of violence. But yeah, I do actually think so. That's my honest opinion. I also watch Current Affairs as well, by the way.
Oh, well, you don't get much. That's very violent, isn't it?
Yes, it is. So you don't know where to turn.
Yes.
Turn to blockbusters. It's the only answer, really.
Yes. Well, a couple of other cheerful things. But, Bob, you work very hard and obviously enjoy what you do. Do you have time for other things? Hobbies? Going to the theatre? Well, what do you do on Sundays?
That's a good question. Watch telly, really. Because we dart about the place. We go out quite a lot. The very nature of my work, because I do fairly long interviews on LBC and chats like this, you see, very often with theatre people, it's a labour of love because I adore going to the theatre, and it means that I'm forced into going and booking tickets and going to the theatre. I very often let things slide. I wouldn't mind going to the cinema more. I've got so many films to catch up on. I like the cinema, I like the theatre, two methods of relaxation. I like music, I like gardening. It depends what the weather's like. But yes, right back to the beginning of your question, I'm afraid at the moment, writing and working and doing things at home and preparing the house after the floods this winter and all that sort of thing take up an awful lot of time.
Well, this love of show business, which you clearly have, it leads us, I think, very nicely into your next record, Frank Sinatra singing Stardust.
This record is, again, a favourite of mine. Anybody who's heard any of my favourites before will have expected it, for one very good reason, and that is Hoagy Carmichael's Stardust is a beautiful song, but how many times have we heard it sung just the chorus without the verse? Now, Sinatra knew this because he's the master at this sort of music. I'm not confusing him with the master, who was Noel Coward. And he persuaded Don Costa, who's the orchestral arranger on this particular record, to orchestrate just the verse of Stardust. Don Costa not only orchestrated it, but he put his own theme in it, which runs through it. This is one of the most thrilling arrangements, I think, of string music I've ever heard. Don Costa, Frank Sinatra, and the verse of Stardust.
Love is now the stardust of yesterday. The music of the years gone.
Another old-fashioned bit of music.
Ah, but that orchestration was magic.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Don Costa, what an orchestrator.
Yes.
Absolutely marvellous.
You mentioned earlier on that sort of nostalgia influenced you in your choice of music. Do these kind of songs, this one particularly, have any sort of romantic personal association? I mean, are you the kind of person who remembers these things because, there was that time we walked on the moonlit beach?
You're fishing, aren't you?
Well, yes, of course.
Actually, the ones I have played, no. The ones I have played... isn't it difficult? You know, you said to me on the telephone before we did this, you don't know whether to choose pieces you genuinely like or pieces that will reflect well on your image.
A lot of people do that. I mean, usually end up with pretentious pieces.
Oh, these are genuine favourites of mine. Yeah, I suppose everybody does have tunes that remind you. I mean, Mary and I, when we met, I suppose Blue Moon was one of the things that we used to dance around the floor to, you know, out in the sun, moonlit skies. I remember all the music from State Fair because it came at a time when I lived in Ashford when there was a, funnily enough, a fair visiting in the market there. And the music was playing on all these stands. I do associate things with certain bits of music, but not many of them have that much of a sentimental attachment, so you're not getting me to say any more than that.
Coward, you said you were.
I tell you what, I interviewed somebody on this very programme, an actress, and she went gaga at every piece of music she put on because every single one was associated with an amorous side of her life.
How nice.
Yes.
How nice.
I shan't repeat her name.
We talked about your hobbies and what you did on Sunday. You like travelling, don't you?
Oh, I love travelling, Bill, yes.
Well, you can't get that much opportunity to do it because...
I do now. I mean, at one time when I was doing the AM show every morning, it was a bit tricky, you know, I'm able to shuffle things around and get away quite a bit more now. And recently, of course, I've been going to the Middle East. I went to the Middle East last year and I'm going again this year because Blockbusters is running out there. It's their top show. It's the one they show here. They rebroadcast it over there. And in Ramadan, they take it off the television screens and they stage it. The Gulf News, the newspaper, stages it on stage. And I go over and present the semi-final and the final in 100 degrees. You know, it's great fun to do. I should be going out there. I like holidaying. I like holidaying in different places. I'm not one of these people who likes going back. Now, you travel more than anybody else I know.
Yeah, but it's my job and I enjoy it. And you asked a question when I was on this programme and sitting at the other end of the microphone. That my favourite places, and I remember kind of launching into a long list. Let me turn that one on you. Tell me about a few places that you really enjoyed and you really love to go back to.
I can tell you, I did. When was it? I suppose it was just before LBC started. Around that time, I was writing films, second features at cinemas, travelogues. Did a lot of that, and the films took me more than anywhere else to Yugoslavia. I did four films. I wrote them and part-directed them and narrated them in the end. And I love Yugoslavia. If you get into the hinterland, as you probably know yourself, it is absolutely marvellous.
The islands are beautiful too. I mean,
yes, they are.
It's one of the great destinations.
Yes, but there's one place in Yugoslavia which is my favourite place, and it's called Plitvice. The Plitvice Lakes.
Yes.
16 lakes.
All those waterfalls.
Ah, unbelievable. A national park. Sheer peace. That's the place to go.
Well, we should tell people how to get there, I think. You go fly to Zagreb.
That's right, yes.
And then it's a long drive.
You would know the technical side of it, wouldn't you? Yeah.
Well, I agree with you. The Plitvice Lakes are really quite...
They're absolutely lovely,
joys. And Dubrovnik is of course... Yeah. Place everybody heads for, but it's a lovely time.
And still, I suppose, I must retain a vast affection for the Drakensberg Mountains in the north of Natal, where we spend our honeymoon, the Drakensberg Mountains hotels. You come out of the mountain hotel and look across the mountain range, and it's a sight never to be forgotten.
Have you been back to South Africa?
I've been back a few times. Of course, my sister's still out there with her family. Mm. But the visits have got less and less over the years. The situation there is so grim, and the whole political situation... as well as the sort of climate when you get there, I don't mean the temperature, I mean the political climate, that it doesn't make it a very happy place to go and visit.
Well, I mean, there are certain quite attractive places. I mean, the Kruger Park, for example, good for safaris. And I must say, kind of the town you lived in, I think is pretty awful, Durban.
Mm.
No comparison with Cape Town, which is...
Well, no, Cape Town's the most marvellous place in the world. Yes. Yeah.
All those people sitting on the... It always struck me as extraordinary, you know, can't find any whites on the beaches. They're all sitting there. They're either kind of red-faced German tourists, or all the South Africans are sitting on the beach trying to get dark. Getting a tan. It's extraordinary, isn't it?
Yes, of course, on many, many of the beaches now they are mixed, and there are some that still aren't, and of course that made the news a little while ago when that white Member of Parliament went and tried trespassed on a black piece. All that business makes it a very, very sad country, I feel. Very sad. On principle now, I don't think I'd go back.
So you're happy that you'd left. Could you live anywhere else? Australia? America?
I've never been to Australia. I don't think I could live in America, no. I went to Florida a couple of years ago, thoroughly enjoyed it, but only stayed a fortnight, you see. I think I could quite happily stay in mid-Europe. I would adore, if I could afford it, to stay in Switzerland. Mm. I love Switzerland and the lakes and the mountains. Absolutely superb. In the summer.
Are you good at yodelling?
Yeah, very good at yodelling, yes. I'm not going to demonstrate.
All
very
that
good
cheese and cuckoo.
I've never skied in my life. But
no?
No, I'm not a winter holiday.
You like
maker.
To keep warm.
Yes, I do. Yeah. On the sun. I follow the sun.
So do I. What about islands? You like little islands?
Yes, I do. Yeah. Even the Isle of Wight. And I say that because not in any deprecating way, but the Isle of Wight is part of the mainland, really, even though they deny that categorically. But I do love islands.
A bit of an escapist in you?
Oh, all the time, yes. Mm. Yeah, I would like to get away as much as I possibly could. Not that there's anything wrong with where I live, it's just that I like a change of scene.
Not that you'll ever retire, but if you eventually do, will you travel more? Is that one of the things?
I think so. Mm. I get letters, a lot of letters, on this overseas programme I did. It's in its 10th year now, this one programme called Anything Goes on World Service. And I get, a surprising number of letters from people who are retired and who write from the middle of the ocean and post it in one of the ports they call in. And only last week I answered a letter, and this person said, we are in the Caribbean at the moment. We've stopped off in Barbados posting this letter. When you play our request, we'll be somewhere in the Pacific. Isn't that marvellous, to be able to just do that and go from place to place? That would be ideal.
Let me ask you about your two daughters.
Mm.
They're both singers, aren't they?
They both have sung, yes. Mm. Singers. Carol, actually, the eldest one, she adopted a name some time ago now. She gave it up soon afterwards. She signed a contract with EMI and called herself Nancy Nova. She was thrilled to bits the other day because she found her name and the name of Rosalind's group, which was Toto Coelho. They had a big hit and went all around the world. She found both their names in the latest Guinness Book of singles, hit singles. Tim Rice and Paul Gambaccini and the Get It Up and this Guinness Book. And there they are, you see, because they achieved a sort of fame. Roz is still very much... They both trained to be actresses.
Why is that? Following Dad's footsteps, mother and father's footsteps?
We didn't actually push them anywhere at all, but one went to the Central School and the other one to Bristol Old Vic. And then Carol got married and married a musician and has two children.
Are you a grandfather?
Yes, yes, have been for 8 years.
Oh, grandpa.
No, there's nothing wrong with being a grandfather, Bill. What's the problem?
No, I mean...
Have you age problems, Davis?
No. I mean, that's just, I wouldn't know how to cope with that, actually. I think quite
it's
difficult.
Great fun.
Yeah,
it's great fun.
It doesn't make you feel ancient.
No, not really. You see, what it does, when they come and stay with you, or when you take them out to a show or something, you get all the enjoyment of this 7 or 8 year old.
And none of the pain.
None of the responsibility.
Yes, isn't it great?
You can take them back home, drop them with their mother again.
Yes, that's why I've always thought it's nice to be an uncle rather than a father, you get all the best of it.
There is a lad, Jonathan, who is working at the moment. He's 20. He had a little group as well. He started a group, which disbanded. They call themselves the Helsinki Monitors. How's that for a group?
And the kind of stuff, I dare say, from what you've said earlier on, the kind of stuff that they play is something that you really have no taste for at all.
Well, it's something, let's say, that I can't quite understand it. Now, how's that for magnanimity? I think that's...
Maybe they'll explain it to you one day, Grandad.
Do you realise how the time is going? It's absolutely rocketing past.
Yes. Well, you know what it's like to be sitting at the other...
Yes, I do. It's not too bad at all. You're
getting over your nervousness. Your hands have stopped shaking.
Yeah, well, good.
Useful,
yes,
and you stop twitching and all the other things.
Yes.
Now, the next bit of music, last bit of music, is very different, isn't it, from the others that you've chosen so far.
Yes, it is.
Mendelssohn.
That's right.
Now, this is fascinating. Why that?
I suppose I get quite emotional with music. You talked about music generating emotional thoughts. It's the other way around with me. You know, there's certain bits of classical music that... I mean, not only classical music, that arrangement of the Frank Sinatra thing always makes me sort of feel a bit soft. Now, there's the bit of music we're rounding off with, Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto, is the most gorgeous bit of music, and it's one of those bits of music that makes me actually want to cry. I don't know why. I don't often burst into tears when I hear it, but it has that terribly, terribly sad feel about it. And before we go into it, can I say thank you, Bill, very much indeed for chatting to me. I've thoroughly enjoyed
it. Well, I think it was very courageous of you to do it. Mm. Thank you.
Let's give a big hand to William Davis, ladies and gentlemen, as we hear Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto.
To the second movement from Mendelssohn's Violin Concerto. You've been listening to William Davis in conversation with Bob Holness.
A4020 Uxbridge Road in Ealing near the Broadway, resurfacing means delays. And on Uxbridge Road in Southall, there's roadworks at the junction with Windmill Lane. There are delays there. Resurfacing on parts of Wimbledon High Street and the Broadway means congestion. In Richmond, Hill Street Junction, Red Lion Street, temporary lights are being installed. And tomorrow this will definitely cause delays in the rush hours. In Raynham, A30 New Road has roadworks near the junction with Upminster Road. That's causing delays. And in Upper Edmonton, the North Circular is down to one lane eastbound at the junction with Angel Road and is busy there. Finally, Tulse Hill Still, the A205 Thurlow Park Road is closed between Norwood Road and Lancaster Road for bridge repairs. There is a signposted diversion. Graham Lyle, A Road Watch.
Hi, this is Angelo of Ferrari's Cab Company in Flatbush, Brooklyn. Did you folks in the UK know that you can have a weekend in New York for £199 round trip from Gatwick with two nights hotel with Continental Airlines tours? So when you get off that plane, man, look for me, Angelo, because I'm your main guy. I know every club, every
New York, New York, so good they named it twice.
Ring Gatwick 776-979 or ask your travel agent about Continental Airlines tours New York weekends for just £199.
Plus a couple of bucks for the taxi fee.
261 metres, medium wave, 97.3 VHF stereo. Talking to London, this is LBC. The 2 o'clock news, this is Therese Birch. The KGB has broken up a peaceful demonstration by human rights campaigners outside the Kremlin, while on the other side of Moscow, the authorities are playing host to an international peace forum. Western academics, scientists and celebrities, including Gregory Peck and Yoko Ono, are being shown the new Soviet image of personal freedom, while on the streets the repression continues. Martin Walker reports from Moscow.
The Group for Trust, an independent peace organisation, tried to hold up placards reading Peace and Trust at Moscow's main art exhibition hall just opposite the Kremlin. Plainclothes KGB men who had been lying in wait pounced at once, ripped down the posters and hustled the four demonstrators back inside the building for interrogation. It was coldly efficient rather than brutal, but another reminder that the only peace slogans permitted on Soviet streets are those that have an official seal of approval. Martin Walker for IRN, Moscow.
In Belfast, police are investigating an incident in which their officers shot and injured two innocent women customers in a restaurant early this morning. Liam McSheffrey reports.
Police were called to the city centre restaurant at 3:30 this morning, where they confronted a number of armed and masked men. The RUC fired a number of shots, injuring three people, two female customers and a man. One woman is described as ill with wounds to the abdomen, the other also ill with grazes to the head. The man's condition is serious with chest wounds. It's believed robbers entered the rear of the building and forced the occupants into the kitchen. Police later recovered two replica firearms, masks and clubs. Liam McSheffrey, IRN, Belfast.
At least 10,000 hungry Palestinians streamed out of a refugee camp in southern Lebanon today when the Shiite Amal militia lifted a three-month-old siege. And in Beirut, several small groups of women and children were allowed out of a besieged camp where children are now dying of malnutrition after living for weeks on cats, dogs, rats and grass. Aid groups are still trying to get permission to take supplies to the starving thousands left inside. Independent Radio News. And the weather, a cold, sunny afternoon for most of us. The possibility of some brief snow showers to the east side of London in Essex and Kent. A top temperature of 5 centigrade 41 Fahrenheit in central London. 3 centigrade 37 Fahrenheit in the suburbs. Tonight will be dry, fine and very frosty. The temperature falling to minus 1 centigrade 30 Fahrenheit in town. As low as minus 6 centigrade 21 Fahrenheit in the suburbs. With some mist patches as well by the end of the night.
It's Flybush here on LBC.
And this afternoon, is it too easy to borrow money? We'll be talking to Gallup about some new research. News of a first break into the modelling world you might like to take up. Peter Dealey from AM will be here talking about a fundraising project he's just launched. The 3 o'clock reviewers have been checking out Harrison Ford's latest movie, The Mosquito Coast. Later, I'll be talking to fashion man Jeff Banks about the UK Fashion Awards at the Royal Albert Hall next week. And we'll hear about Elton John's rise to fame. The news quiz of the week comes up shortly. Monday to Saturday, you pick the day. Three right answers in 30 seconds. 01-353-8111 if you'd like to have a try. And still at the top, the music to dial to. It's Aretha and George, I Knew You Were Waiting For Me.
I found my way out of darkness.
Thatcher now, who is indeed a Texan.